our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You've been hearing a ton of bitching forever about Trey Turner not being up.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
First off, I don't like to do this. And, I mean, you know personally I don't like to do this. But bravo to you for, mentioning prior to the season starting that Espinoza is your guy. And
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I mean, there's no way that you could have forecasted this.
No, but, I mean, I didn't think he was hitting 18 home runs for the year, much less for the first half.
I mean, if that doesn't tell you enough, then I don't know what does.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 129 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for Friends of Fantasy Benefits.com. Join with me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Just the two of us. It brings back memories. Just you and I. It's a nice experience, to have you and I on a pod together. I will say the Rays are back in the days of having one relief pitcher make the All-Star team. And I mean, Evan Longoria is on the final vote ballot. But other than that, it's what you would come to expect from possibly the worst team in the American League.
Yeah, I haven't seen who made the All-Star teams yet. I haven't looked. I really don't care. I mean, I don't like the I got the little message from MLB.com's app thing saying that the Cubs are starting their entire infield, which I think is atrocious.
That's ridiculous. There's no way if you're trying to win a game. I mean, especially a game that is going to determine who in the World Series gets home field advantage, that I'm going to start Addison Russell as my shortstop.
Which why are we still doing that? I mean, back to the game not mattering? Because like the idea that actually this game has any, weight on the World Series especially is absolutely ridiculous.
Agreed. I mean, if you go to any other All-Star game, the Pro Bowl or the NBA All-Star game, I mean, neither of them have any type of impact on the actual regular season. I mean, the NBA All-Star game is all nice and everything, but like the score is like 170 to 150 every single year.
And that's what it should be. It should be fun like that. Like
exactly.
I mean, it definitely shouldn't be what the Pro Bowl is, because the Pro Bowl is an absolute fucking joke.
Can't even watch it. Can't even watch it.
I mean, it hasn't been good since Sean Taylor lit up that punter. I don't even watch the Major League Baseball All-Star game. I'll watch a little bit of the Home Run Derby. I watch the Futures game because that's really interesting to me. I wish they would do like skills competitions like the NBA and NHL do, so I think that would be really cool, as opposed to just having a Home Run Derby. Like, I want to see like how many guys can throw pitches at 90, 5 plus through a tire that's swinging or something like that,
yeah, it'd be fun.
see if like the Ichiro types and stuff, the slap hitters could like do like, pristine placement of balls, hitting, in batting practice and stuff like that. That would be cool to me, but, let's get off the All-Star game. Let's kind of jump in to our first kind of topics. But before we do, we want to remind everybody that you can go out and get a ring from officialfantasyrings.com. They are our sponsor. They make customizable rings for your leagues. Use our promo code FWFB for 10% off at checkout. Let's go ahead and jump in to our first topic. And let's talk about kind of the bullpen situations that have changed up a little bit. Fernando Rodney gets traded to Miami, and that kind of throws two bullpen situations up into kind of a little unknown right now. In San Diego, you have Brandon Maurer and Ryan Buchter, I believe it's pronounced. And then in Miami, you now have A.J. Ramos and Fernando Rodney. Which bullpen system are you most likely to kind of invest in right now?
I mean, I've been preaching for people to pick up Ryan Buchter for about a month now. And, you know, sure as hell, as soon as an opportunity arises and Rodney finally gets traded, they go with Brandon Maurer, or Maurer, however you pronounce his name, as the guy. I mean, he's been highly erratic this season compared to years past. I still don't feel comfortable with him. His first pitch strike rate is by far the worst in his career. He's still getting strikeouts, and, you know, I definitely like relievers that do that, but he's giving up a ton of home runs. I don't feel like the job is going to be his long term. I think Buchter is going to be the guy, even though he is a lefty and he doesn't have, you know, supreme velocity. I do think that he will be the reliever in the long term that I would invest in amongst this, you know, four guys that we're talking about. You know, just flipping to the other side really fast with Ramos and Rodney, you know, the Marlins are surprisingly just staying in the hunt. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're going to be in the wild card game at the end of the season, but they're doing a really good job of staying in the hunt. They don't have D Gordon back yet, and, you know, once they get him, maybe they make things interesting.
Aren't they tied in the wild card right now, or just one game out or something like that?
It's yeah, I haven't looked at the standings in a few days, but the last time I looked, they were right in the thick of the wild card race, which, I mean, by all means, if they make it there, I will definitely be rooting because they, you know, deserve it. You know, Ramos, I still believe in. I mean, I know he's not the cleanest reliever in the world. He definitely gives up his fair share of walks. I mean, he's actually reverted back to his 2014 walk levels, but he's continuing to miss bats. And, you know, he's you know, getting a bunch of saves for people. So In the rest of the season, I think Ramos holds the most value of these four, but I definitely would speculate on Buchter above Maurer just because I think that the skills are a bit better.
I agree with you. The skills are better for Maurer, or for Buchter than Maurer. The left-handedness, the lack of velocity, and the lack of track record all point to Maurer being the guy. And obviously he's getting the first shot, so he, you know, there's the opportunity. So, I mean, out of the San Diego guys, as much as I, like, if I'm just looking to speculate and keep guys, you know, keep guys away from other people, okay, Buchter's fine. You know, I think there's a possibility he ends up with more saves at the end of the season than Maurer. But if I'm in need of saves now, and there's a couple leagues where I was in need of saves now, or guys in direct competition with me were in need of saves right now, I went out and I bought on Maurer because I'm keeping him away, and he's got the job now. Opportunity role is what is important. You know, sometimes skills don't always translate. It's one of the things we talked about at the beginning of the season with Ken Giles and Luke Gregerson. You know, obviously Giles has the better stuff, the better skills. But, you know, teams don't always care about that. Not to mention San Diego is rebuilding. Do they really want to build up Buchter's, you know, arbitration numbers if they do believe he's a part of a long-term future? So I'm going to disagree with you in terms of if I'm picking up a guy right now, it's not Buchter, it's Maurer. In terms of the Miami bullpen situation, I'm sticking with Ramos. I think he's you know, he's younger. He's part of the long-term solution there in Miami. They don't, you know, they have no reason unless Ramos struggles to put Rodney in. And Ramos has been fairly good except for early season stumbles.
Yeah, I mean, Rodney has a 90% strand rate or left on base rate, which he hasn't been able to do since his, you know, historic 2012 season with the Rays. I mean, where he put up a 0.6 ERA. I mean, right now his ERA is 0.85. If you really expect Rodney to continue that, then, you know, by all means, continue to ride the you know, hot hand while it's going. But, you know, I think Rodney is a good baseball move. You know, for fantasy teams, I think he'll acquire some holds if you're in a holds league. But for the Marlins, I think it's a great move for fantasy owners. I think that you're going to end up, you know, regretting putting a lot of money on Rodney, because I think Ramos is going to end up keeping the job the rest of the way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, unless you're in NL only, or you're in, NL only is obviously still, you know, it's probably going to continue to be owned, or in holds leagues. I think that's where you get the most value. He'll get a few saves, you know, along the way, just here and there, but I just don't expect him to replace Ramos unless Ramos has some sort of huge blow up. Let's go ahead and move on to kind of our list of players that we're going to talk about tonight. And let's start with Carlos Gonzalez. Carlos Gonzalez is absolutely killing it this year. I mean, he's already hit 18 home runs. He's got a 317, 366, 561 triple slash. Is this the Carlos Gonzalez of old, the one that used to be considered a first-round pick, or is it time to sell hard right now?
Well, I think it's time to sell because, you know, the real problem with Carlos Gonzalez isn't his performance on the field. It's the fact that he doesn't, you know, tend to stay healthy. Last year, we got a full season and, you know, he hit 40 home runs. So we know that the talent is there. We know that he plays in Coors Field. My issue, the reason that he will never be a first rounder again is because he's not going to run. You know, back in the days when he was an actual first round pick, he was hitting 20 to 30 plus home runs and then also contributing 20 stolen bases. Is hitting 300. I think the 300 batting average, you know, he's at 317 right now. I think that that is sustainable, not to that point, but I think, you know, around 300, maybe 280 plus is where you'll see him kind of lie when the season's said and done. But the power is legit. There's going to be, again, no speed. He's going to be hitting in a solid lineup. But I do think it's time to sell because we can't bank on his health being good. And also the Rockies, you know, they're just not a team that's going to be staying in it. How much are they really going to want to push him, you know, as the season goes on? Unless they're trying to sell him to another team, which is also, you know, a possibility as well. I mean, at least for now, I would try and sell him, you know, as a fantasy owner, but there is the possibility that he gets traded as well, which is intriguing.
That's the big thing for me. I think there's a huge possibility that he could get traded. He's got 1 year left on his contract. It's worth about $20 million. If they can free up that $20 million for next year, I think they're going to. I think there are a number of teams that would love to have a guy like Carlos Gonzalez, you know, out in left field for them, namely my San Francisco Giants.
And I mean, the Rockies also have some nice outfielders in their prospect system. I mean, they could easily bring up David Dahl later on in the year if they wanted to. I think that's a possibility. And if, depending on where he goes, you know, his fantasy stock will more than likely take a dip no matter where he goes. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, even if he goes to a very hitter friendly place, I think you still have to kind of, there's always going to be that, you know, that thought in the back of people's and of fantasy owners' minds of, you know, when is he going to get injured, which is a shame because, I mean, when he was a first rounder, it was just an awesome thing to watch.
Yeah, I think this is the time to sell if you can. You know, what would you try to acquire? I mean, you know, this is a guy, you know, who's got, you know, obvious health risk, a trade risk out of Colorado. What would you take for Carlos Gonzalez right now?
Man, I would try and go to... Really, I would try to go to the Miggy owner. The Miggy owner.
Do you think you could actually get Miggy, though? Because I don't think you could get Miggy.
Maybe, I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm trying to kind of just speculate. Like, I'm not trying to stay with outfield because I'm assuming that if you're, it's hard to trade an outfielder for an outfielder straight up.
Let's say, like, you know, you loaded up on offense in the first half. You need some pitching. Would you do Carlos Gonzalez for Noah Syndergaard?
Another guy with health risk. I'd go Syndergaard.
I think I'd go Syndergaard too. Okay, let's maybe then go a little bit lower. Danny Salazar.
If I needed pitching, I'd go Salazar.
I think I'd go Salazar too. John Lester.
If I needed pitching, yeah, I would go Lester.
Kluber.
Yeah, Kluber.
I don't think I would do Lester. I think I could do Kluber, but I don't think I could do Lester.
I think it's more the stability, though. I mean, like, yeah. I don't think Lester's talent in any given month will necessarily outweigh what Cargo can do in a month. But I do feel like I can bank on Lester pitching the rest of the season and giving me quality innings and ratios.
That is a fair point. Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and move over to a guy who hasn't been as great as he was earlier in the season. That's Jake Arrieta. Has turned in a couple subpar starts. Is it time to worry about Jake Arrieta?
No, it's not. I mean, every pitcher kind of has times where, you know, he hits lulls. And I think that this is kind of the lull that we're sitting on with Arrieta. I mean, even last month, you know, despite him only having two quality starts and five actual outings, you know, he still put up a 3.54 ERA. His xFIP that month was 3.49. The strikeout rate was still over 11, which was the highest of any month this season as well. You know, he has dropped in his first pitch strike rate. And when I've watched his starts, he's not commanding his pitches as well, which is kind of, you know, especially last outing, it led to some more home runs given up by him. But I absolutely, the velocity is still fine. The pitches still move, you know, adequately. It's more just, I think he has something mechanically that's going off a little bit. And I think that that's something that can be corrected. If you can buy low on him, I absolutely would. I just don't think that there's very many, you know, people that are willing to, you know, sell him at this point. But in terms of wondering if there's something wrong, I don't. I saw a lot of people last start after, you know, Arrieta got bombed, you know, saying how, you know, Arrieta is no longer the best Chicago pitcher, which I still kind of disagree with. I think that Arrieta is better than Sale right now.
Oh, I don't. I think you're kind of, you know, nitpicking, though. I mean,
exactly. And I ended up comparing both their numbers for last month, and there was multiple things that Arrieta actually did better than Sale in. But regardless, I mean, the main point is I don't think that there's anything wrong with Arrieta. This is just kind of a blip on the radar, and he'll be fine.
I think this is just the natural regression we all kind of expected kind of starting to show up. You know, I mean, he's just been so dominant throughout the season, you know, up until, you know, a few weeks ago, that I think we forgot that everybody said, hey, you know, his numbers from last year were unsustainable. Like, he wasn't going to repeat that the amazing numbers from 2015. And this is just part of that. You know, the pitchers go through stretches sometimes in which they struggle a little bit. But, I mean, he still has a 2.33 ERA for the season and a better K per nine. So, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, the walks are a little bit... you know, are a little bit up, and that could be a little bit concerning, but he's still an elite pitcher. He's still a top 10 guy, top, you know, seven guy going the rest of the way.
Agreed. I mean, and that's, you bring up a great point with the walk rate, showing a tiny bump up. That's kind of consistent with what I was talking about with his command overall of his pitches. And, you know, when you're factoring in the regression or quote unquote regression that we were expecting this season, I think that's part of it. Cause I mean, when you look at his career track record, he's not been a guy that has maintained consistently great walk rates. You know, in the last 2 years with Chicago, they've been insanely good. I mean, 2.4 and 1.9 walks per nine these last 2 years. This year, it's 3.5. which is actually more in line with what he's done in his career. So, I mean, I think the regression is more in terms of the walk rate than it is anything else.
Yeah, agreed. Let's go ahead and kind of jump into a kind of hot button topic. If you're in any sort of like Facebook group that has any sort of people that are into dynasty leagues, into prospects, or if you're on Twitter and follow any guys who are really into prospects and things like that, you've been hearing a ton of bitching forever about Trey Turner not being up, and everybody complaining that Danny Espinosa shouldn't be the starting shortstop in Washington. And I'm assuming that Danny Espinosa just follows all those people on Twitter because he is just absolutely fucking killing it right now. Already has 18 home runs this season. I believe that's more than Bryce Harper, if I'm not if I'm not mistaken. How are you looking at both of these guys kind of rest of the way?
I mean, first off, I don't like to do this, and I mean, you know personally, I don't like to do this, but bravo to you for, you know, mentioning prior to the season starting that Espinosa is your guy and that you believed in him. I mean, there's no way that you could have forecasted this.
No,
but,
I mean, I didn't think he was hitting 18 home runs for the year, less for the first half.
I mean, he has the same amount of home runs as Manny Machado. I mean, one behind Story for the, you know, lead in terms of shortstops. And honestly, you know, it's getting to the point now where the Nationals actually switched Trey Turner's position to the outfield, which I think is where he would probably get the better chance of coming up sooner. I mean, we've heard all season that Turner has struggled defensively at shortstop, and Espinosa has been a top five guy consistently all season long in the major leagues, which already in itself, regardless of his offense, was going to keep him on the field. And now, you know, with Turner switching over to center field, I think it's going to take more time for him to kind of, you know, develop his skills and hone in on his skills in the outfield, and it's going to take, you know, Danny Espinosa is not losing that job. I mean, barring an unforeseen, catastrophic drop in offensively, I still don't think that even guarantees that he would lose his job as well.
He was awful to begin the season. I mean, aside from the fact that his first half has just been absolutely amazing, I'm pretty sure he hit like Mendoza line the first month.
Month he was saying 185 with one home run and 65 at bats. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's not going anywhere. Dusty Baker likes him. Dusty Baker sticks with his guys. And defensively, he deserves to be out there. And, you know, I know as fantasy owners, we don't tend to care about defense, but it plays a role in fantasy in terms of getting people at bats and getting people roles in organizations. Espinosa isn't going anywhere. They did send down Michael Taylor last week. So, you know, that may be a little bit of foreshadowing, and they haven't added another position player. They decided to go with an extra pitcher when they activated Papelbon. So I think there's a chance that Turner is up. You're more of a prospect guy than I am. I haven't been extremely high on Trey Turner. I believe in Matt's prospect rankings, he has him as a top 10 guy right now. Where are you kind of situated on Trey Turner going forward?
Well, I think that he is a surefire major leaguer, which, I mean, you can kind of take that for what it's worth. From a fantasy standpoint, I think he's a guy that consistently will offer you speed, which is nice, you know, but the offensive upside, I don't think is as high as people might hope. I was definitely hoping for the best for this season. I thought that he could possibly come in and, you know, play a significant role for the Nationals. But at the end of the day, you know, at least for the rest of this season, you know, I think if you're holding on Turner, you can maybe possibly hope that he gets a call up in the next month. I don't think it's coming soon. And, you know, for long-term purposes, I think that he has the upside to be a consistent, you know, back-end top 10 guy, which, you know, is okay for fantasy teams. I wouldn't put him as a top 10 fantasy prospect because the upside isn't as high as people might hope. But again, you know, a 20 to 30 stolen base guy that can probably hit for a decent batting average isn't bad to have at shortstop. And, you know, I mean, depending on where you value that, that's where I think he'll be.
Yeah, I think he loses a lot of value too, though, especially moving away from shortstop. If this is going to be a long-term position move for him, I mean, if the Nationals don't think he's a very good defensive shortstop, I don't think there's a reason to keep him there. So, you know, him moving to the outfield really hurts his value, because, I mean, I was thinking of him in terms of, you know, fantasy-wise, you know, like an Elvis Andrus. You know, a guy who can hit 5 to 10 home runs and steal 20 to 30 bags at the major league level with a good average. But if he's going to be in the outfield, I mean, the speed will have value for sure. But is that a guy that you're really looking at as at any point going to be a top 100, 150 player? I don't think he is. And so, you know, I got a question over the weekend. Someone was asking me, you know, because I made a comment about Michael Taylor being sent down and everybody, you know, celebrating for no apparent reason. And someone asked me on Twitter, and they're like, well, you know, I've got I'm looking to add Trey Turner via trade. Should I move Manny Margot and Hunter Pence for Trey Turner in a dynasty league?
No.
And I was like, absolutely not. No. And he was like, okay, well, what if I just keep Margot and offer him Hunter Pence? And I said, I don't think I would even do that. Would you trade Hunter Pence right now? Like, if you're trying to compete right now, are you trading Hunter Pence?
Nope, absolutely not. I'd rather have whatever Hunter Pence gives me the rest of the way. And
I think Hunter Pence is probably Trey coming Turner. Back.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think Pence is coming back a little bit sooner than maybe some other people do. You know, there's a reason they didn't put him on the 60-day DL, which would have kept him out.
Well, if you had to bank on, when do you think he's coming back?
I bet you he's back a week after the All-Star break.
Okay, and that's fine. I mean, we're almost there. So, I mean, yeah, there's no way. There's no way I would do that.
Yeah, me neither. All right.
I think people have been overrating Turner since the offseason.
Yeah, I'm not as high on Trey Turner as a lot of people are, and And there's been plenty of cases where I haven't been as high on guys in the minor leagues. It is other people in the industry. Mookie Betts is a classic example of a guy I completely whiffed on that I didn't believe on coming up. And, you know, so, I mean, if you're looking for, you know, young talent, I mean, you can go ahead and gamble on Trey Turner. I don't think he's extremely special, personally. I think he is going to be a speed guy in the outfield, which there are guys like that, you know. And like I said, speed has value, but I don't think I think Turner's a little bit overrated at this point. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy we're going to talk about, and that's Mike Zunino. Mike Zunino, former you know, early pick, early first round pick for the Seattle Mariners. A lot of people thought he was going to be the next power hitting catcher. Really struggled, you know, at the plate in his first kind of stint in the major leagues. Is called up this last week and hit two home runs in his first game. Is it time to buy in on Mike Zunino?
In deeper leagues, he's absolutely worth a pickup. And the reason why is because catcher has just been so bad this year. I mean, when you look at the catcher position, your number 11 catcher, according to the ESPN player rater, is Cameron Roop. I mean, if that doesn't tell you enough, then I don't know what does. Zunino, while he has frustrated owners for the last couple of years, he has definitely made massive improvements in his strikeout rate this season. He's also upped his walk rate, which means that he is showing much improved plate skills, which is really all we've been waiting for him. And at the same time, he's kept that same nice power that we've been looking for from the catcher position as well. I don't think he's going to add in 10 and 12 team leagues necessarily, but I think in anything deeper than that, he's certainly worth a speculation add. And, you know, even if you did feel like in 12 team leagues you wanted to drop, you know, somebody like Derek Norris for him or somebody like that, then, you know, I think that it's not something I would do, but I don't mind it because I feel like the power upside is good enough with him. The lineup is good enough with him. The one problem is that you are going to see him not play every day, which you can't say about some of the other catching options, but overall I'm definitely encouraged by this. I think he's certainly an add in 15 team leagues or deeper.
Yeah, I think that what you just said, though, is my biggest hesitation. I worry about playing time. Like, I mean, over under 200 plate appearances rest of the season for Mike Zunino.
That's close. I mean, I would say barely over.
See, and I'm going to go under. I mean, I loved Zunino. I really thought last year was going to be a year he could break out. And I like what I've seen in terms of, you know, him walking more at AAA, striking out less. I like a lot of the stuff that he's been doing in the minor leagues, but I don't see the role this season. I think this is a guy that maybe is a post-hype sleeper next season, you know, as a guy who could, you know, kind of take over the everyday catching role and really to return some value. I mean, I think we forget, especially in fantasy, that, you know, catching prospects take a while to kind of get figured out, you know, unless they're a real advanced college bat. So I'm, you know, if I'm rebuilding, maybe Zunino is a guy I go out and buy. But for this year only, I don't think I'm really that interested in him because I don't think he's going to log enough plate appearances to make huge impacts in fantasy for this season. Let's go ahead and jump over and talk about Anthony Descalfani. Descalfani was a guy I really liked coming into the season. We talked about on the Thursday podcast as a guy that I really liked. And I pretty much was like laughed off the podcast. Mike, what have you seen from Descalfani this year? Because he has been good as of late.
You weren't laughed off by me because I like you, were encouraged by what I saw in the second half last year. We saw a spike in his strikeout rate. We saw a big, big, big improvement in his walk rate. Also, I mean, just all of his underlying metrics were awesome in the second half last year, and it was all kind of under the radar because he had a 4.43 ERA and only four wins. So he was definitely a guy that I was looking to buy low on coming into this year. And I mean, especially his last few starts, man. I mean, I understand one of them was against San Diego, but against Texas at Texas and against Washington in Washington, he's piled up 19 strikeouts to 3 walks, only given up 4 runs in that time. And, you know, he's went, you know, what, 20 over 21 innings. I mean, I love what I've seen from him so far. The pitch mix is nice. I mean, this isn't, he's not going to be this type of pitcher all year long, but I do think he's certainly a guy that's serviceable in NL only as one of your, you know, 3 or 4, or as a 3 or 4 starter for you. And then in 15 team leagues, you know, or even 12 team leagues, I think he can be one of the starters that's kind of on the back end of your roster that just adds some quality innings for you. And, you know, I think can just be solid. So I'm definitely in on Desclafani.
Yeah, he hasn't allowed more than two earned runs this season so far since coming back at the beginning of June. He's striking guys out. He's limiting the walks. In his last 3 starts, he has a total of 3 walks. I think this is a really, really sneaky guy to kind of key in on as a guy to go trade for. It's a guy to pick up off the waiver wire in your 12-team leagues. It might even be available in you know, a little bit larger formats. I think he has some upside. Now, in you know, if you're in wins leagues, wins are going to be few and far between because the Reds suck. And they're probably only going to get worse as the trade deadline approaches. But, you know, he's doing all this, you know, 1.78 ERA with a 3.18 BABIP. So, I mean, this is a guy, he's limiting the home runs, he's limiting the walks. I think he's doing everything that we kind of expected of him coming into the season. And he was just a little bit slowed down by injury. I think this is the perfect guy that shouldn't be a buy low target, but is right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's move over to another guy who kind of started off the year as garbage and has really turned it around recently. That's Kendry Morales. Are you buying this at all?
I mean, I'm certainly buying it from the stance that I don't think anybody else really is. And, you know, I mean, the fact that he's not really eligible at a lot of positions is a damper on his value. But I mean, you can't argue with what he's been doing. I mean, since May 31st, he's batting over 400. He has 9 home runs. I took this a couple days ago. So he had 9 home runs at the time, almost 20 runs scored and 27 RBIs. I mean, he's just on a massive hot streak. And, you know, it doesn't seem to me, I mean, obviously it's going to slow down compared to this, but when you look at his underlying metrics, I mean, he's still making solid contact. He's still doing a great job of hitting the ball with power. You know, his home run to fly ball rate is kind of back to where it was, you know, back in his earlier successful years, you know, 2010, 2012 area. It's at 19% right now. I mean, he's walking at the same clip that he has the last few years here. I mean, I don't think that it's going to be, you know, some type of massive boom to his value. I don't think he's going to go for 30 home runs this year, but I do think he's going to end up, you know, swatting another 8-9, you know, for the rest of the season and continue to bat somewhere around 260 to 270, which, you know, in the Royals lineup, they're going to continue to let him play. I mean, I think he's a solid corner in AL only, and I'm probably in deeper mix as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, since the beginning of the season, his pull percentage has trended up. His hard contact percentage has trended up each month. And I really like what I'm seeing in terms of him kind of turning around what seemed to be kind of like a lost season at the beginning of the year for him. You know, he's playing on a team that is probably going to contend for a playoff spot. So I don't think there's a risk of him losing playing time or them trying to work in younger guys. I think he is a pretty steady corner guy like you. Let's kind of do a would you rather at the first base position. Rest of the season, would you rather Morales or Justin Bour?
Oh, man, that's good. I would go Morales.
I went straight for your heartstrings right there.
Well, I don't love Bauer. I like him, but I didn't like him as much as other people this year. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Morales.
I'm gonna go with Morales as well. Morales or CJ Cron, who's been hot as of late.
Morales.
Yeah, I'm going to go on Morales is, as well. Let's see. You know, this one is going to sound really strange that I'm even asking it, but I'm going to because I know you're down on Will Myers. Will Myers or Morales rest of the season?
Will Myers. I mean, okay. Who is, again, the number one first baseman in all of fantasy right now.
Isn't that absolutely crazy?
And he also said earlier this week, I mean, mind you, it's a lot to say, but not do, obviously. But like he said that he's going to try for 30 stolen bases, which, again, I don't think he's going to do. But the fact that the Padres are bad and he can pretty much just do whatever he wants on the field. I mean, it's not like they really care at this point. I mean, I think he could possibly get, you know, 22 to 25 stolen bases and add another 10 home runs on the year. Like, we're looking at a guy that is going to go possibly 30-20 with a, you know, 270 average. Like, he might be a you know, fourth rounder next year.
He won't be a fourth rounder for me, but
no, he won't be for me either.
He may be an ADP. All right, let me throw out a few more names for Morales. Morales or Chris Carter rest of the season?
I think Morales is the safe choice. I would pick Carter, though, personally, because I think that he could obviously, you know, give us a lot more power.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. I think Morales is the safer choice, but the upside plays is Carter, and I'm going with Carter because he's my boy. Morales or Mike Napoli, who's actually been a top 15 first baseman this year.
Yeah, and also top 3 in strikeout percentage. I'm going to go Morales.
Yeah, I'm going Morales as well. Last one, Carlos Santana or Kendrys Morales?
I'm going to go Santana there.
I'm going to go Santana as well because I believe in what the Indians are doing right now.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next guy we're going to talk about, and that's Bud Norris. Bud Norris, you know, was traded to the Dodgers, you know, right around the same time that Kershaw went on the DL. Has looked really good in his last few starts. Is it time to buy in on Bud Norris?
No, it's not time to buy in on Bud Norris. I mean, I've liked him in like years and years ago with the Astros. I was a little bit intrigued, and I do think that he has enough, you know, in his arsenal that he can be somewhat valuable for a very short stretch of time, which it seems to be what he's done recently, is he's been valuable for a short stretch of time since, you know, what, June 10th or so. He's logged some pretty fair starts, you know, 7 innings against the Cubs, limited them to 1 run. Cincinnati, you know, 5 innings there, but, you know, still struck out 7 guys. You know, I think the reason people are kind of up on him is because the last 2 starts against the Mets and the Rockies, he's struck out 6 and only walked 1 in those 2 outings. Again, though, the Mets have been struggling to find offense except for against the Cubs, apparently, due to their injuries. And then Colorado was, you know, obviously on the road in that start, so they have a bit of a worse time when they're, you know, hitting on the road as opposed to at home. I think overall he's an NL-only ad for now. While he is serviceable, I don't think long-term that this is something that you want to buy into at all. I mean, his 3.91 xFIP is, you know, about in line with his ERA at the moment, but I do believe that the Dodgers are just going to kind of keep juggling that rotation. I think he could easily get shifted to the bullpen at some point. You know, the strikeouts are okay, but you know, you're going to, I think that he's just kind of too vulnerable to be, he has too much risk in my opinion to kind of add and feel good about.
Yeah, I don't trust it. I mean, he's a guy who's been up and down throughout the last few years of his career. And I think this is just one of the up kind of swings. I think he's fine in NL only 15 team leagues. You can kind of ride it while he's hot, but you just can't think that he's going to continue kind of this hot stretch. I mean, how worried are you about Kershaw? Because I mean, he's pretty much in the rotation as long as Kershaw is on the shelf.
I didn't know Kershaw even could get injured. I mean, I know he had that blip on the radar a couple years ago.
Yeah, he's had back issues before this. You know, this was my argument, I believe, coming into last season about why I had him ranked so low. And obviously, I was wrong about that. This is like the episode where I like to bring up how much I've been wrong over the years.
It's all overshadowed by Danny Espinosa. Don't worry.
I'm a little bit worried about Kershaw right now. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not selling him. I don't think you can sell him, but I think Norris is probably in the rotation. So in deeper formats, I'll probably ride with it until the kind of the wheels fall off. You know, they finally got Brandon McCarthy back. He looked pretty decent in his first start back. So they're gaining a little bit of depth, but losing Kershaw is a big hit for them.
Yeah, Kershaw having, I mean, first off, when I see a herniation, you know, a disc herniation in your lower back. That is, that sounds off my alarms. I mean, I don't feel comfortable with that. With that said, I think that Kershaw, you know, if it was that severe, that they would have found it earlier and probably shut him down earlier. You know, I do think, though, that he's going to be out for a little while. I mean, we don't have a definitive timetable yet. But, you know, overall, I mean, if you have Kershaw, like you said, you can't sell him. I do think that this gives Norris some leash for now. But like I said, I mean, he's just not consistent enough for you to bank on. And NL only, if you're trying, you know, to get anybody you can off the waiver wire to pitch for you that can log some type of quality outings, then, yeah, I can understand going Norris. But I'm telling you, at some point, it's not going to go well because, you know, he's just not been somebody that can really, you know, string together a long, you know, track record of good performances.
Let's say you're in a league, though, where you really need the pitching, and you've got Kershaw. Let's say it's a keeper or dynasty league, and so you need to sell Kershaw. You need to try to pick up some, you know, a different pitcher to kind of make it through. What level would you move Kershaw at?
I'm still aiming as high as it goes.
I mean, oh, really?
I'm still aiming Sale. I'm still aiming, you know, Arrieta, Scherzer, Madbum, one of them, yeah.
See, I think I would go a little bit lower because, I mean, he's going to miss at least a month. So we're talking about a third of the remainder of the season.
Yeah, maybe in head-to-head formats, I think you could
In
you
head-to-head
possibly...
formats, I'm less likely to trade him because I think he'll be back for the playoff stretch.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I also think that if you were just dead set on moving him in a head-to-head league, that somebody might be willing to give you one of those guys because they could just kind of hold Kershaw. Like, if the first-place owner is sitting with, like, the best rotation in the league and you're offering him Kershaw for Arrieta, you know, I mean, they'll take Kershaw from you and then just wait until the playoffs come, you know, and hopefully they have him at, you know, peak Kershaw level.
I don't think anybody would trade Kershaw for Arrieta right now.
No, not straight up, but in general, it's just a scenario.
Let's say, like, if you've got Kershaw, would you trade him for John Lester?
No. No.
Oh, wow. Okay. Kluber?
No. I wouldn't be trading Kershaw. Because unless it's one of those elite guys, because I just, we don't know definitively how, you know, serious this really is. If this is something that's really going to hamper him. I mean, we saw him pitch through back issues in the past and he was just fine. You know, I think that he could do it again. I guess I would need more information before I sell the best pitcher in the game, you know?
Yeah, I know. But if you're right now, you're looking at a run for a championship and you're going to be missing a month of the best pitcher in baseball, you know, and maybe more. I mean, we know he's going to miss at least a month. He's not going to be back in July. He'll be back hopefully back at some point in August, but who knows? You know, if for some reason the Dodgers start to fall out of it, they may just shut him down the rest of the way.
True. And I mean, if you are just worried as hell about Kershaw, I don't mind doing those deals. I definitely would aim for I value Kluber a little bit higher than Lester right now. I don't know if I should, but I do. So I would go for Kluber above Lester. But if you just need somebody to fill that spot, I don't mind going for one of those two, you know, that are, you know, again, top 15 options, but they're not, you know, Kershaw level, obviously.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy we're going to talk about. That's Jose Abreu. You know, this is Eli's favorite guy in the world. He hasn't really put up the kind of year that a lot of us kind of thought he would when they took him in probably the top three rounds of fantasy drafts. Where are you at on Jose Abreu rest of the way?
He was on my bust list when I did my first base article coming into the season, and that was mainly because of what he did in the second half last year. We saw a little bit of regression in some of your, you know, big stats, you know, underlying metrics like, you know, ISO and, you know, hard contact, things like that. You know, overall, the beginning of the season, especially April and May, started off pretty bad. Wasn't hitting for batting average, wasn't hitting for power, still wasn't getting on base either. We've kind of seen a little bit of, you know, a little bit of upside these last couple of months, or at least in June and a little bit in July as well. You know, do I think that this is going to be, you know, a norm for him where he's going to continue this pace the rest of the way? No. But I do think that, you know, the fact that he's a little bit older, he's 29, coming from Cuba, we don't have the biggest track record on him. you know, I don't think that he's going to be as good as he was last year. I mean, right now he's outside of the top 20 at first base, according to the ESPN player rater. I don't think he ends up there. I think he ends up being a top 15 guy when it's all said and done. But I do think that we're going to be seeing him not post 30 home runs for the first time in his two-year career. I don't think he's going to hit close to 300 for the first time in his two-year career. You know, and I just think overall you're going to be looking at a guy that just isn't going to, you know, do what people thought he might. You know, I mean, the rest the way. I will say that if you took him in the first three rounds, you know, you're obviously not going to get profit on that, but at least the rest of the way, I don't think you'll see him be as bad as he was the first 2 months of the season.
So would you, if you don't have Jose Abreu, would you be trying to buy in on him right now?
Depends on the level, but yeah, I wouldn't mind buying him right now because I think people might be a little bit done with him.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm buying in right now. I mean, I loved Jose Abreu. I mean, I didn't love him necessarily, you know, in terms of where he was going at in drafts, but he was, you know, I love him as a player. I thought this would be a great year for him and the White Sox, and the White Sox have really started to kind of fall off in the last month or so. Do you think he makes it to 25 home runs? He has, what, 11 right now? That means another 14, because I don't think he does.
That's a good over-under. I'd say it's close. I guess if I had to bank on it, I would say he does, yeah.
Yeah, I'm worried about him. I mean, it's the lowest hard contact percentage of his career. He's not pulling the ball, you know, and he's really not making the same strides in the average. I mean, he's walking enough to be an asset, you know, or to make up a little bit for the fact he's got a little bit of a low average. But I don't really see a ton that makes me really excited that you're going, like, if you bought in on him right now, because I think he's still got a big enough name that buying in on him right now means having to give up, you know, 70, you know, cents on the dollar on draft day. I don't think he's quite worth that.
True. It depends on what somebody is willing. When I'm saying I'm buying him, it means I'm, you know, at what price. I mean, at the end of the day, he's doing what I thought he was going to do from the second half last year. I mean, his hard contact is actually a bit less than it was in the second half last year. His line drive rate is consistent with what he did in the second half last year. His home run to fly ball rate is less than what he did in the second half last year. So you're looking at a guy that is pretty much continuing what he did from July on in 2015, and, you know, really other than June this year, he hasn't shown positive signs. So if you believe that the positive signs in June are for real and that he's going to kind of, you know, get out of this funk that he's had for the last 5 months of actual MLB, you know, regular season time, then that's an avenue for you to buy low. But you bring up a great point. How low are you going to be able to buy? Because, like, personally, I think he is very comparable to, like, Kendrys Morales, that I think is easily attainable, as opposed to somebody like Abreu, who people still remember, like, oh, I bought, you know, in the top 30 of my fantasy draft, as opposed to a guy like Morales that was, you know, picked much, much later.
All right, let's do another would you rather with first baseman. Would you rather Jose Abreu or Joey Votto?
Votto.
Yeah, I'm going Votto as well. It's not like Votto's been great this year either.
No, but he's a second half surger.
Yeah. Brandon Belt or Abreu?
Belt.
Oh, really? I think I would still go Abreu.
Yeah. I like Belt having the outfield eligibility in some places. I think he's consistent. Right? Yeah. He's on Yahoo. He's outfield eligible.
Okay. One more. Let's see. Oddly enough, Hanley Ramirez is a top 10 first baseman on the ESPN player rater. I don't know how they come up with these metrics, but Hanley Ramirez or Jose Abreu the rest of the way?
I would go Abreu, but it's very, very close. The Red Sox lineup is so good that I think that the counting stats could be there for Hanley alone, and the fact that he's going to beat him in stolen bases no matter what. It's close. I would go Abreu, but I don't feel good about it.
You know, when I first asked the question, I was going Abreu. And now the more and more I look at it, I think I'm going Hanley. I think the stolen bases, the power isn't going to be that different. I mean, Hanley has 8 home runs to 11. You know, maybe Hanley gets another 8, ends with 16. but is the different? I mean, the amount of runs and yeah, I think no, I think I'm going to Abreu, but it's really close.
It really is. It's really close.
All right, let's go ahead and move over to Michael Pineda and talk about him. This was a guy that kind of started off a little bit rough this season, but has put together a number of pretty excellent starts in the last month or so. Is it time to buy in on Michael Pineda?
Yeah, to say he had a rough first couple months is definitely underselling it.
Yes.
He was absolutely hideous the first couple months of the season. This is the if you have a prototypical buy low candidate, this is exactly who it is. I mean, almost leading the league in swinging strike rate. His strikeout rate alone is in the top five amongst all MLB pitchers, not just in the AL, all MLB guys. His strikeout to walk ratio, which is a really good in season indicator of how a pitcher is doing, is also amongst the league leaders. I mean, he's just gotten so insanely unlucky. His home run to fly ball rate, it has been absolutely hideous. He's finally started to, get it down a little bit these last couple months here. But, you know, at the beginning of the season, it was outrageous. It was something like 22%. You know, as the season has gone on, we've seen it go lower and lower. But overall, I mean, just insanely bad BABIP. I mean, it was at 370. It's at 370 currently. Last year, it was the worst of his career at 340. But for his career, he's at 310. So, I mean, you definitely can see some positive regression in that standpoint. If you look at his June alone, he put up a 275 ERA. The xFIP was at 266. The strikeout rate was over 12 per nine, and the walk rate was at 2 per 9. So I think that he is your prototypical buy low candidate. People are probably already starting to figure that out. So if you haven't been able to capitalize, then I apologize. But this is a guy that should be somebody should be trying to buy as soon as they possibly can, because I think he can be a top 30 pitcher the rest of the way.
Yeah, he made some mechanical adjustments since kind of the rough start earlier in the season. They've really started to pay off. An xFIP of almost 2 runs less than his ERA. The underlying statistics are showing you that this is turning around, and it's turning around fast. In the last 4 games, he's had 12 strikeouts, 8 strikeouts, 9 strikeouts, and 8 strikeouts. And he hasn't had more than 3 walks since May 11th. This is definitely a guy to try to buy in on. Rest of the way, top 30 pitcher?
Yeah, that's why I said top 30 pitcher. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
And I honestly, if you wanted to be really bold, top 20, if you want to be really bold with it, but I think top 30 is
considering the guys
there.
We've lost, considering the guys that that are on the DL or that have struggled, I think I would call him a top 30 to top 25 pitcher rest of the way. Would you rather have him or Carlos Martinez?
Martinez,
yeah,
but it's close.
Martinez too. Him or Stephen Wright?
Oh, him.
Okay. I agree with that. Rich Hill.
Pineda
too. Quintana.
Oh, man. Quintana, but I think it's because I think Quintana's been better than he has even been recently.
Yeah, I think I'm taking Quintana too. I'm trying to find one more good one. A guy who's also been a fantastic as of late, Trevor Bauer.
I go with Pineda over Bauer.
I think I'm going Bauer, and it's
really
and it's only it's a better park, better team, better chance for wins. I really like what I've seen out of Bauer last month.
So do I.
I mean, he's been really, really impressive.
Yeah, he has been.
Yeah, let's move on kind of a tandem that's near and dear to my heart. Jared Parker and Mac Williamson have been manning the outfield in San Francisco for the last month. You know, this is more for kind of deeper leagues, 15-team mixers and deeper. But are either of these guys worth picking up?
You tell me, because I personally, I don't have either of them. If I was going to go with one, it would be Parker, because I feel like he's a lefty. I know Gregor Polanco got scratched today from his, his start, but, overall, I don't really have much interest in either of them. If anything, I would feel like Gregor Polanco would get some more consistent playing time until Hunter Pence returns, but you're the Giants guy. So you tell me.
You know, I wanted to bring this up because Matt was super high on Mack Williamson, and I saw Mack Williamson on, I want to say it was Saturday, hit one of the farthest home runs I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was like 470 or some shit. Yeah, it was crazy.
I mean, it went like through the scoreboard in center field. And that was really, really intriguing to me, seeing that kind of power, because he plays really good defense. In my thought process when I wrote, you know, when I wrote this up and was that I, you know, even though Parker's getting the majority of the playing time, I think I'd rather have Mack Williamson rest the way, because I feel like he has a better chance with Span having some, you know, kind of lingering issues going on, with Hunter Pence being injured, with Angel Pagan not being able to stay on the field, you know, very often in his age. That Mack Williamson might actually get a real shot to prove himself. But then they put Jarrett Parker out in center field the other day. He looks pretty decent. He looked pretty decent out there. He's got the most amount of power, and it seems like the team is more interested in giving Parker an extended run. I think Parker's the guy to pick up, and I actually did pick him up in a couple of 15-team leagues this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the fact that he's a lefty is already a good, you know, platoon situation, because he'll get the majority of the starts. But I also dig what he does. I mean, if you look at his career track record, a guy that walks consistently, he does strike out a lot as well. But he's shown that he can hit for power at times. And, you know, with that walk rate and the fact that the Giants lineup against righties, at least, is really, really good, despite having their injury issues. I mean, I think that Parker would be my pick, even though I am intrigued by Williamson, because I think that, you know, the power, I almost compare him to Souza a bit, Steven Souza from Tampa Bay, because you know, he has a power speed combination. He's good defensively. I mean, he probably won't get injured nearly as often as Souza, but overall, I kind of compare him to him, which, you know, could be useful in deep NL only, I guess. But I think Parker is the, you know, that's the guy I would gravitate to personally from the outside perspective.
Yeah, I think for this year, Parker's the guy I want. Parker reminds me a lot of what I thought of Adam Duvall when Adam Duvall was with the Giants. I really thought that until he moved out of San Francisco, he would be kind of a quad A player. And I see a lot of that in Parker as well. But with the openings in the San Francisco outfield right now, until they trade for someone or until some of these guys start coming back from injury, Parker is going to play. He does have power in his bat. And I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, had a month, you know, before Pence gets back, where, you know, or a few weeks before Pence gets back, where he could hit 3-4 home runs in a week.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got legitimate power. You know, we saw it last September, where he hit like 8 home runs in the month of September. So, you know, he's got legitimate power. I don't think in your 12-team mixers he's worth picking up. But in 15-team leagues, if you're hurt in the outfield, if you just lost a Jock Peterson or someone like that, he's definitely worth a gamble there.
Yeah, Span, isn't he on the DL? If my mind serves me, maybe he's not.
Unless they put him on the DL today, I don't believe he is.
Yeah, but regardless, I mean, you make a great point. Angel Pagan or Angel Pagan, he's, you know, always consistently injured. Span has had his injury problems. Gregor Blanco got scratched today. I don't know if it's a long-term thing, but regardless, I mean, it's kind of like a revolving door of, you know, situations in terms of these injuries. So, you know, maybe Parker will carve out a decent role, at least for Daily Fantasy last year in September. I mean, he was a cheap option that, you know, I could always kind of count on, because, I mean, he was always, whenever he was on the field, he always seemed to do something.
Agreed. You know, I originally put Joe Ross on this sheet before he officially went on the DL. I saw his last start. His velocity was really down. You know, we can talk about him just briefly since he got sent down, maybe in terms of, you know, do we think that Lucas Giolito stays up for a little bit longer now that Ross is down? What are your thoughts on Ross rest of the way now that he's on the DL? And does this kind of give Giolito a little bit longer leash?
I mean, I think you and I are very, we think the same about Giolito. We love him long term, but at least for now, I wouldn't value him higher than almost anybody. I don't see the long term for 2016. I don't see the long term value for him. I don't like that, you know, he is about to surpass his, you know, inning total from last year and probably a few starts here. You know, I also, you know, with Joe Ross, at least I liked what I've seen from him. I knew that he wasn't going to be like a world beater this year, but he's shown some solid skills overall, especially for what you paid for him on draft day. It's unfortunate that he went on the DL, but I think he's a guy that you stash. And when he does get healthy, he's going to come back in the rotation. I don't think that his job is insecure or anything. He will come back, but at least for Giolito, you know, you're going to be seeing very abbreviated short outings. I don't think that his command is good enough yet to be an asset in mixed leagues, at least. And, you know, again, his inning situation is going to be something that we're going to have to monitor all year, which, you know, especially in quality start leagues is a problem. I talked about this on the Writers Room podcast that, you know, if you're picking between Glasnow and Giolito, I'm going Glasnow all day long over either of them. And I don't think it's particularly close. And, you know, I mean, I just don't feel like Giolito, you know, regardless of how I feel about him long term past this season, for this year alone, I just don't see a reason to buy him, because I just, again, I feel like he's going to be a bullpen piece. They have Matt Latos down there as well. While I know that's not a big name, he's certainly a guy that Dusty Baker will bring up and have clogged the number five spot in that rotation for a while if they have some injury issues, or if Strasburg needs to be held back for a start, or, you know, whatever the possibility or whatever the problems might be. But I think you and I think along the same lines here.
Yeah, we do think along the same lines. I said it on the ITL podcast this last week. I wasn't able to be on the Thursday or Wednesday show last week, when he was talked about by both shows. But when I was listening to it, I was definitely screaming at my phone, my podcast player, that Giolito wasn't going to get enough innings, this season to be a real force in fantasy. Like I said, I love him long term. I think he's going to be a fantastic pitcher, in the future. He's definitely a guy that, I wish I had more shares of in my Dynasty and Keeper formats. But for this season alone, I just don't see the value. I am a little worried about Ross.
Shoulder problems are always scary.
Yeah, especially with a guy who throws as many sliders as he does.
And his brother is on the DL too with a shoulder problem. Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe it's hereditary.
Yeah, the exact. Well, I mean, when you throw as many sliders as both those guys do, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you could have shoulder, you could have elbow problems. So, I mean, that is definitely concerning. But at the same time, I don't think this opens up the door for Giolito to be a full time force in the rotation going forward for this season. Let's move over to the last guy we're going to talk about. And that's Travis Jankowski. I want to say Janikowski, but that's the kicker from Oakland. He has taken over a role in the outfield in San Diego recently, and is stealing bases left and right. What are your thoughts on him rest of the way?
I think he's certainly a guy in NL only to grab. I mean, he's leading off a ton for the Padres. While I know that they're not a good team, he has 19 runs already and 90 at-bats, which is solid. Like you mentioned with the stolen bases, I mean, they're letting him run as much as humanly possible. On top of that, he has a great speed score in itself, so that's probably why they're letting him run. Strikeout concerns, absolutely. He only has a 64% contact rate this year, which means that he's striking out a ton, and he also, you know, hits a ton of ground ball, so you're not going to expect a lot of power, but I mean, he's hitting almost 300 against righties this year. Like I said, he is leading off against right-handed starters. He is walking a very good amount, almost, you know, 13% so far. You know, I think overall, at least for the short term, until the Padres start turning over their roster a bit, he's a solid guy in NL only to have it for nothing else, at least for some stolen bases and some runs scored with a decent batting average, based on the fact that he, you know, is able to take a walk and can kind of control the strike zone a bit, even though he does strike out.
Yeah, I think, you know, the average may be a little bit of concern. I know he's got speed, and so maybe the extremely high BABIP won't come down a ton. I mean, it's going to come down. It's not going to be 386 rest of the way.
No.
But, you know, the amount his speed could actually help it stay up at a pretty high level. But there is a little bit of a fear for me that he could the average could crater a little bit. The speed is legit, and he is, like you said, batting at the top of the order against right-handers. And I think as, you know, we start getting towards the trade deadline, if the Padres can move Upton or Kemp or both, I think, you know, he's going to have his role kind of cemented there. I know they're high on Manny Margot, and Manny Margot and Renfro both should probably be up at some point this season. But I think those guys will have to wait for the spot to open up with Kemp or Upton getting moved.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up, Mike. Why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. You can listen to the latest ITL Writers Room podcast. I was a guest for them last week. If you want to check that out, talked a bunch of different fantasy stuff going on. You can always read. Right now, I'm going through a series of comparing dynasty prospects, not just prospects, but comparing dynasty assets on the friendswithfantasybenefits.com website. So definitely check those out. And you can check out my daily matchups column on Baseball HQ every Saturday. Check out my Rays stuff on fantasypros.com. We got the DFS podcast on Fridays with Cam and myself, and the Prospect Pod with myself and Matt Thompson. So a ton going on.
And then you can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. I've been really busy recently. I was on the Chris McBrien's final episode of Dear Mr. Fantasy last week.
RIP.
Yeah, I mean, we'll miss him a great deal. I was actually thinking of putting together a bunch of clips from past episodes that featured Chris McBrien in doing a little in memoriam thing. So maybe that'll come out during the All-Star break or something like that. And then I was part of something, or I got to cover something that was really, really cool over the weekend. Two women were signed by an independent league baseball team, became the first two women became the first co-ed professional baseball team since the 1950s in the Negro Leagues. I had a couple women play in them. It was a really interesting experience, a really amazing time. I had a blast going and watching the Sonoma Stompers, Kelsey Whitmore and Stacey Piagano, both making their professional debuts. And I'm writing something about it that I believe will be up on the Hardball Times at some point this week. There's a chance it could not be up, but it should be up at some point this week on the Hardball Dimes. So definitely check that out. I'll be tweeting it out when that comes out.
Yeah, I got to read that piece that you showed me, and it's really inspirational stuff because, I mean, regardless, we all play fantasy and we all have fun doing it, but the majority of us are guys, you know, let's be real here. And the fact that, you know, women, you know, really have to go and try a lot harder, not only in the fantasy space, but in the sports space as well, to be recognized for what they do, I think is not fair to them. And, you know, I think we all can kind of relate to the fact that, you know, women in general, you know, have to work so much harder to gain recognition in these spaces, which I think is why your piece was so, you know, just really interesting to read and really just kind of refreshing to read as well, because I think it's just something that should be, you know, noted to people more as opposed to just kind of letting it go and not thinking about it.
Cool. I really appreciate that. So yeah, definitely check that out. Check out all our podcasts. Give us a rate and review on iTunes. We could definitely use that help there. And then always thanks to Laura Michaels and the Biotones for giving us permission to use their music as our intro and outro music. For Mike and myself, thank you for listening and have a fantastic baseball season.